So what I'm proposing now is that we should awake from this nuclear trance and start doing something about it. I am asking for your help, but at the same time, I know that you are very busy. The kind of people who come to a gathering of this kind usually have many different activities, whether it's the environment or the human rights or globalization or many other problems. You are involved in it already, and you may not be able to spend more time on other activities, but I'd like to ask you to dedicate a portion of your time to this cause and doing one thing or another. And let me suggest a couple of things that you might be interested in doing. That you can talk to your mayor of your city or town, or if the mayor is not already a member of the Mayors for Peace, then you can bring, we can provide the information. You can take that to your mayor and talk to him or her. Actually, the American, about 20% of American mayors are female, and they are great. I met some of them in Washington, D.C., and they're very dynamic, and they know what they're talking about in politics and theory and everything else. But anyhow, talk to your mayor and persuade your mayor to join the organization. If your mayor is already a member, please help him or help her. Okay, this work is in many ways an extra work for a small town or small city, and they could use able hands. Just people like you helping the mayors would be a great asset to the city as well. And also, you can start by reading Hibakusha's testimonials. There are good ones in English translation as well. And finally, I'd like to recommend movies. There are good movies which have been made over these 60 years, about nuclear weapons, nuclear war, the danger of nuclear weapons, and so forth. Not all of the movies are as gruesome as the one you have just seen. There are good fiction movies which will nevertheless convince you that something ought to be done. And I would like to just mention two which have literally changed my life. The first one is based on a collection of stories, testimonials, that the children in Hiroshima wrote. And the movie's name is called The Children of the A-Bomb. The other movie, I saw this in 1959. It's called On the Beach. And it's a famous movie. So if you haven't seen it, or if you want to recommend it to someone else, then I think that would be a very good way to start thinking about the movie. It's a movie about a nuclear war, and the entire Northern Hemisphere is wiped out. Nobody lives in the Northern Hemisphere anymore. And this story is the scene of the story is Sydney, Australia. And eventually, the entire world, will be wiped out by radiation. But during the period that movie covers, there are still some people living in Sydney. And in that movie, the Salvation Army people are preaching on street corners, saying that you still have the time to repent and be saved, even if the entire humanity will be gone. But the last scene of the movie is actually, for me, it was the most moving scene, and in a sense that changed my life. In the last scene, the entire humanity is gone. The planet is lifeless. Nobody is alive on Earth, even in Sydney. And so the last scene sort of comes close to the city hall of Sydney, and one thing which flutters is the Salvation Army banner, on which you can read, "There is still time, brother." And I got the message in 1959. And I have been trying to tell the people that there is still time, but there may not be that long time left, so let's start acting. And actually, at this point, in the 60th anniversary of the atomic bombing in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, That's exactly what the Hibakusha would tell you. There is still time, brother and sister. So let's act together. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Tadatoshi Akiba, mayor of Hiroshima and head of Mayors for Peace. 72 U.S. cities have joined Mayors for Peace, including San Francisco, Boston, Atlanta, Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, and one city in Illinois, Schaumburg. You can obtain information about getting your own city to join at the Mayors for Peace website. And Mayors for Peace is sponsoring a concert in Madison Square Garden in New York City. The Back to the Garden concert, directed by Joni Mitchell, takes place today and will be broadcast worldwide on August 6th. We're coming to you from the trenches. On this, the 60th anniversary of the atomic bombings by the U.S. of the cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, an exhibition is running at the Peace Museum in Garfield Park. The exhibition not only displays artifacts of the aftermath of the bombings, but also includes an historical timeline of little-known facts about the bombings and a documentary movie. At its opening on May 6th, Katsuji Yoshida, a Hibakusha, or A-bomb survivor, spoke through an interpreter about the instant 60 years ago that changed his life. At the time of the blast, Mr. Yoshida was walking with friends outside of the city of Nagasaki. This is an excerpt of his remarks.
I was a 13-year-old boy and a second-year student at a commercial high school. Early in the morning, on the day that the atomic bomb was dropped, an air raid alert had sounded in Nagasaki. This would be to announce that planes were coming in to attack. Me and the students at the school that I were at, had been evacuated out into the woods that morning. But the alert was soon lifted, and we headed back to our school. It was a very hot summer day, and I was getting really thirsty, and I called out to my friends, "Hey, let's stop and get a drink of water." There weren't many houses around, but we kept walking down and came across two houses, one of which had a draw well with buckets in it. As we came up to these two houses, and I walked up to the one which had a draw well, I began hoisting up a bucket of water. And just when I was holding it up with my hand, I saw up in the sky two parachutes falling down. I called out to my friends, "Hey, there's parachutes coming down." So my friends wanted to know where the parachutes were going to fall. We all stood there looking with our hands over our eyes, saying, where are they going to land? And it was at that moment that, bam, the explosion went. We were thrown through the air, a distance across a road, across a field, a distance of about 40 meters. Just a moment earlier, we'd been fresh-faced 13-year-old children, but now the cold of the water woke us up to find out that all our skin had been burned off, melted off. All seven of us stood up in the cold water, looking at each other and commenting on, "Whoa, how burned you are, how burned you are." We were talking like this, just being 13-year-old kids. So the seven of us stood up, and we were all commenting, saying how burned we were, but thinking that these were just burns. We just cheered each other on, saying, "Well, with a little ammonia or something, we'll be able to heal them." So we looked closer and found out that all the skin had been burned off or melted off our arms and legs. Our faces had been slightly covered over when we had been blown away. So although the skin of our faces was scorched, it at least still remained on our faces. The other skin, the skin from our arms, was hanging down in long strips, which were just held on at the tips of our fingers, so the skin would just hang down like rags. So I think that the reason why the skin remained on our faces was that I always compare it to something when you're grilling a fish, or in Nagasaki we grill squid, and when the heat hits them, they curl up. I think that's what happened to our bodies, and so our bodies curled over, but our faces were somewhat covered, and that's why the skin remained. We only thought at that time that we should wash ourselves off because a lot of mud had become stuck to our exposed flesh. We went back up the hill where we'd been before and washed ourselves off in the water there. Luckily, it was a forest area, and there were still some leaves around which had not been scorched. We thought that having no skin, we should take these leaves and stick them to our exposed flesh to make up for the skin. A few minutes later, a group of women came up who had been higher up the hills. They were screaming and crying, screaming, "Help, help," and running down. Now, my friends and I hadn't cried up until then, but seeing them cry set us off as well, and we started crying. We joined a group with them and went down the hill together. Although we'd started crying when we saw these adults crying, at that time we didn't feel any pain at all. We followed them down the hill, and as we came closer to the city, all we saw were corpses everywhere. It was like a mountain of corpses. There were bodies with legs blown off, stomachs ripped open and the intestines coming out, heads that were split open and the brains were coming out. There were faces with the eyeballs had popped out. These were the things that we saw as we approached the city. These screaming women who we'd followed down seemed to be overcome with thirst, and when we got to the river, the Urakami River, which flows through Nagasaki City, they all charged down to the river to drink. Everybody was doing this. People would stick their heads into the river and drink, but when they did, they would never bring their heads back out. They would just die like that. Everybody was doing the same thing, so these bodies began to pile up. It was a big pile of bodies in the river. My friends and I, we held off going to the river to drink. We were just students, and every day at school we had an army instructor who came and gave us lectures on what to do during air raids and things like this. One of the things they always told us was never to drink water when you are wounded. Now, this was a time when you did everything that your teacher told you, so we remembered those instructions, even though we'd always complained when we had to sit through the lectures, and we were able to hold off from drinking water. We seemed to be the only ones who were doing this. Now, instead of going down to the river, we went up back the hill, and as we did this, the summer heat began to hit these leaves that we'd stuck on our exposed flesh, and from the heat of our bodies and the heat of the sun, these leaves began to crumble and fall off. That left just our exposed flesh. All we could do to avoid the sun, which was now beating down on our exposed flesh, we just crouched down as we could and waited for evening to come. Finally, it did. I was sure that I was going to die at that point, but my friends and I, we all kept trying to cheer ourselves on. Even though it was hot, it was like a living hell for us at that time. But when evening came and it cooled down a little, all seven of us had the exact thought, which was that, oh, now that it's cool, we're finally saved. Well, we were forgetting about the heat we'd suffered at this time, but it was at this point that my face began swelling up. It began swelling up at an incredible speed, like it was never going to stop. Then my eyes began to get covered over as my face swelled. And I tried to hold them open with my fingers, but the quicker the swelling got, the more I had to, the more strength I had to use. And at a certain point, I just ended up ripping off the burnt skin that was on my face. Then I just let the swelling take over and my eyes were covered over. Just then, one of the boys who was with me, a boy named Tabuchi, shouted out that he really wanted to try to get home. Mr. Yoshida and his friends were still up in the mountains at this point. Now, I couldn't see, but I managed to answer him. And then he told me, he said, "Hey, I really want to go home. Will you guys let me go home?" We told him, "Look, the whole city of Nagasaki's been destroyed, so you can't go." But he decided that he'd take off anyway. I spent the whole night shivering in the cold. I didn't get a minute of sleep that night. not even a little. In the morning, somebody came from a relief center, which was in Isahaya. Isahaya is a little town just next to Nagasaki. Somebody came from a relief center there. They had a little bit of ointment or medicine they could put on us, and they took us to the grounds of a local school, which has been destroyed, and laid us down on the schoolyard. The friend of mine, the boy named Tabuchi, who'd tried to get home the night before, actually did make it home, but it took him the whole night. He arrived at his house the next morning. Now, his house was near mine, and he went over to my mother and informed her about my condition. My parents had assumed that I had been killed in the bombing, but this boy, well, he told his mother, and his mother told my mother that although I'd been horribly burned, I was still alive and to hurry up and come and rescue me. So my mother and father set out to come to get me. They would have to go a distance of 4 miles, 7 kilometers or 4 miles, through the burning wasteland. Now, at first, they walked through the area where people had been evacuating to, so they didn't see any of the destruction or the dead bodies. But at a point within 2 kilometers, this is about a mile and a half from the hypocenter of the bombing, they started to see dead bodies everywhere, scorched and dead bodies everywhere. They were walking over streets which were boiling hot. They would have burned their feet, but luckily all the water pipes along the road had burst, and in a few places there was cool water running over where they could cool down their feet. So my parents asked around. There were a lot of relief workers in the area by this time, and they asked around where children from my school would have been taken to. And they were told about this commercial school, the yard of the commercial school where I was. Now, even when they got there, they couldn't find me. There were so many young people wounded, where entire bodies were completely covered in bandages, so they had no way to tell who was who. Later, after I'd had treatment and come out of the hospital, I asked my mother, how on earth did you ever find me, considering that there were all these bodies wrapped up in bandages, you couldn't tell who was who. My name is Katsuji, so she said she'd walked around screaming, Katsuji, Katsuji, wherever she could. But all these wounded people, everybody wanted help, they wanted water, and everyone would answer, everyone would call her over when she called out. And she said all the voices sounded similar to me, so she still couldn't tell who was who. So my mother was getting confused. At a certain point, she'd seen so many dead and wounded bodies that she started to forget what she was doing. She went back to my father and asked, well, how are we ever going to find him in all this? And my father told her that instead of shouting out my name, she should go up to each person and just whisper the name into their ears and try to get a sign of recognition. So that was how they did find me. Now, through my experiences, all these horrible experiences of my life, which I eventually overcame, I came to truly hate war. I hate war, and I don't think that's a bad thing. It is a terrible thing, though, to hate people. I always hate war, but I never hate the people. I feel that it's important in this time when we still have an awful threat of nuclear weapons to teach people to speak out and teach people about the importance of peace. In Japanese, if you look up peace in the dictionary, one definition will mean to spend every day being happy. Now, this is what I always tell children when I teach them, how important it is to spend every day happily. I feel that people today have almost forgotten how to live like that and how to enjoy their peace. I always ask them, what would happen if an atomic bomb fell tomorrow? You'd have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people killed in an instant. I want people to understand the awful threat of nuclear weapons and the importance of peace.
The basis for peace is for people to understand the pain of others. Thank you.
That was Katsuji Yoshida, a survivor of the Nagasaki bombing in 1945, speaking at the Peace Museum on May 6th. Mr. Yoshida has undergone numerous surgeries since the blast, but still wears a patch over where his right ear was burned off. The exhibition at the Peace Museum runs through August 14th. From the Trenches is produced by Chicago Indie Media at the studios of Loyola University. You can listen to this and other programs again through our internet address. The address is www.chicago.indymedia.org. Listen again on the fourth Monday in August for another report from the Trenches.